ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Economics.
Well, as we mentioned with Ron Meisen there, the latest ABS inflation data released today shows quarterly inflation rising sharply. It lifted 1% from 0.6% in the December quarter. Now, that's somewhat quelled hopes of an interest rate cut in the near term, with price increases evident in these latest figures across rents, education and medical bills, and an uptick in services. Normally this time on a Wednesday, we talk with Ian Verinder. With us, Ian's away, but with us again is Gareth Hutchins, ABC Business and Economics reporter. Gareth, good evening. Welcome to Nightlife.
Well, thanks for having me back.
Was this result a surprise?
Yeah. Economists said they were surprised. I think you just mentioned it there. Inflation had been forecast to rise 0.8 percentage points at the start of this year, but rose by 1 percentage point. And so it meant that overall annual inflation it fell a little bit. It's to 3.6% now we're running at, but it's falling more slowly than people were expecting. So it's just thrown a bit of a spanner in the works.
Moody's Analytics says the rising cost of services, this is interesting, the particular categories that pushed things up, the rising cost of services was the main culprit holding back progress towards lowering inflation in Australia. And these were included insurance premiums jumping by their most in 23 years. Yeah. Rents growing at their fastest annual pace since 2009, and education fees saw their largest quarterly rise in 12 years. What on earth is driving this?
Well, this is where things get interesting, because a lot of these things are prices that the RBA has no control over. So insurance premiums.
Nor to consumers at all.
Well, what's happening in the insurance sector? Insurers keep telling us that they're facing higher reinsurance, natural disaster and claims costs. Mm. And they're the things driving higher premiums for house and home contents motor vehicles. So things like with the extreme flood events in 2022, for instance, that left insurers stretched, and they've been passing those costs on. That's just one dynamic. Jump over to rents, grew at their fastest annual pace since 2009. That's 15 years. Now, vacancy rates are at exceptionally low levels around the country, across the capital cities. Add that with record population growth. That has nothing to do with the RBA. Education fees. I mean, lots of things like, so education fees and medical services fees, a lot of them are increased. They're indexed to CPI at the start of
everything. When you say education fees, what does that mean? I mean, does that mean private school fees, or does it mean HECS? What does it mean?
Yeah, private schools, so tertiary fees. So overall, it rose by 6.5%.
That's just because of inflation. That's because of inflation. I mean, inflation has pushed up HECS debts. That's the reason they've risen, isn't it?
Well, yeah, you've got, because they want to maintain the value of the debts.
Right.
The schools want to maintain the real value of the fees they're charging. And so these things, GPs, medical services, they regularly at this time of year, every year, look around and see what type of costs they can increase, because, you know, they have to keep their consultation fees, the real value of them, up. Now, Commonwealth Bank's economics team actually pointed out that 8 of the top 10 contributors to the quarterly increase in prices were non-discretionary items.
We've made this point before, and so therefore, what on earth does keeping high interest rates high have to do with putting pressure on rents? It has no difference whatsoever, or insurance premiums, or for that matter, education fees, does it?
Well, the rents example is a good one, because if you remember back to Philip Lowe when he was governor, at one point, he said that higher rents will help to push rents lower in the long term, because the higher rents will basically force people to economize on their housing. So whether they get an extra roommate, or they move back in with their parents, or whatever, you know, whatever way you want to put it.
So in other words, if you drive people into misery, this is kind of nutcase thinking, isn't it?
No, that's, well,
or maybe that's the way they think. Maybe that's the way they think.
I couldn't possibly use that word to describe it, but that's just the way that the system works. The higher prices will drop because we have a problem with housing at the moment. We have to get people to economize on housing. The higher rents will help people to do that because that will force people to make choices about what their priorities are.
So they're saying higher rents will in the long term lead to lower rents.
Yes, that's almost a direct quote from Phil Lowe.
Explain that to me again.
Well, because when rents rise, it will force people to economize on their housing, which will force some people to make the decision to either move back home with their parents or get an extra roommate or something, which will reduce demand pressures across the economy for housing because people are economizing on that housing, which will see that the rents go down over time.
Okay.
That's how he put it.
No, I'm not, Gareth, I'm not taking you on at all. I just sometimes the thinking of these top shelf economists, I just find bizarre.
But well, anyway. the problem is they can't do anything about the population growth at the moment. What can they do about that? They can only deal with cards they're dealt, basically. And the one lever that they have is interest rates.
That's getting back to my point, really. The one lever they have is interest rates. That lever really doesn't have much influence on these, you know, examples that we've been talking about, insurance premiums or I mean, I take your argument about, or not your argument, but Philip Lowe's argument about rents and education fees. But anyway, yeah, look, the Reserve Bank of Australia wants inflation to ease so they can get back to the 2 to 3% inflation band. It's been a bit sticky around the world, though, inflation, hasn't it? I mean, it's the same in the US. Yep. I mean, it's not as though it's just Australia's problem here, is it?
No, it's not. But the problem is, so it's not a worry. Like, inflation is still coming down.
Yeah.
It's just that the timing of when that will happen has been made more difficult. We saw a lot of economists today shifting their view on the likelihood of rate cuts. A bit of a pivot towards people saying you can't actually rule out another rate increase now, given how sticky these prices seem to be. But it's also the talk of two rate cuts this year seems to have been pushed aside. So it's just raised a few questions, really. It's just more about the timing of everything when it's going to actually happen.
Sure.
And then the problem is, if you push out the timing of this stuff, you open up the chances of getting hit by some unanticipated shock from overseas. And, you know, geopolitics is a bit of a tinderbox right now. And so anything could be coming down the line when it comes to oil prices or anything like that. So, yeah, they would have liked to see interest rates coming down on the schedule they thought they were coming down. If they're going to be taking longer than they're planning, it's just going to, it's just going to be a big problem.
Sure. Look, on another matter, a former Italian Prime Minister, Mario Draghi, delivered a speech last week that caught your attention, Gareth. He argued that the European Union will be marginalised if it continues to shrink compared to other parts of the world. I mean, it's interesting. I mean, we'll put aside the reflection that should we be taking lessons from any Italian Prime Minister post-war about stability, economic growth and management or anything else. But this speech caught your eye, didn't it? What was he saying, and why did it catch a bit of attention among economists?
Well, he's a former president of the European Central Bank. He was president of that bank from 2011 to 2019. So during their sovereign debt crisis after the GFC. And he was asked late last year by the European Commission to come up with a plan to revitalize the European Union's economy in the face of the stiff competition it's seeing from the United States and China. Now, he gave a speech in Brussels last week where he updated everyone on the shape of his plan, the shape that it's taking. And so he'll have to deliver his report to the Commission in June. So this was a bit of a sneak peek into what his plan will be. Now, he said that he thinks the EU will have to undergo radical change in order to stay competitive in the new world of strategic competition. So you go, oh, I've heard that word before. Where major economies are now scrambling for control of major resources and supply chains in what everyone thinks will be the future global economy built on renewable energy. Now, he said the world was changing rapidly and it's caught the EU by surprise. And since certain countries aren't playing by the rules anymore, and some countries are even trying to make other countries completely dependent on them by seizing complete control of, important technology and goods, in some ways, the EU, he was saying, will have to start manufacturing items for themselves so that their national sovereignty and security doesn't come under threat. Now, where have you heard all that before?
I think there's an Act of Parliament called Future Made in Australia, I think, Gareth, which is Mr. Albanese's songbook here as well. Look, it's more evidence, isn't it, Gareth, that the world is heading after years of after the post-90s and the end of the Cold War and the collapse, the downing of the Berlin Wall, when there was a new world of open trade and the profits and the benefits of open trade, which have enriched many countries, pulled many people out of poverty, were trumpeted. We now seem to be heading back into a world of nativism, nationalism, and protectionism, don't we?
Now, I wrote a piece because after Albanese's speech a few weeks ago, it reminded me of a lecture that John Maynard Keynes gave in Ireland in 1933, where he was talking about kind of similarly about, looking around, what was happening in the world at the time. In the middle of the Great Depression, Adolf Hitler had just been he'd just risen to chancellor in Germany. Stalin had just entrenched his power in Russia. Mussolini had been in power for a decade in Italy already. Like the global system was completely different to what it was 15 years earlier. And Keynes was looking around and saying, look, as much as we like free trade and all of those things, laissez-faire, we can't go back to that world. The world has changed. So countries, you can't really criticize countries for looking around and saying, well, what are we going to do in this situation? Do we need to change our economic architecture or whatever? I referenced that because I just thought there were some similarities. And it angered a few economists. And I completely understand why, because that lecture by Keynes is kind of a classic in the literature of what's called autarky. And economists do not like that word at all. They don't like nativism, anything like that. I completely understand why. But Albanese gave that speech, and then only last week, Mario Draghi
Gives a
over
very
in
similar
Europe
speech.
said a very similar speech. And regardless of whether we agree with them or not, we just have to note that these top minds are thinking this way, and that these major areas of economic activity will be changing in coming years. We just have to kind of deal with it.
Whether it's enriching us or otherwise, and probably it's the otherwise, and if we look at the lessons of history, unfortunately. Gareth, always great to chat with you. I appreciate it. Thank you.
No worries. Thank you.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.